What up, everybody? This is Spencer, and you are listening to my dad and his Handgun World podcast. The reason he carries a gun is because he can't carry a cop.
And all guns should be Glocks, all Glocks should be 9mm and Model 19.
I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 270 of your weekly Handgun World podcast, a practical show done by a practical everyday guy like me. Well, this is a voicemail episode. I've got a big backlog of voicemails to cover. Matter of fact, I'm probably going to have to use this week and part of next week's show to cover all of the voicemails. I'd like to first say goodbye and bid a very fond farewell to the Gun Rights Radio Network. Last Friday, the 28th of February, the Gun Rights Radio Network officially shut down. If you didn't know that, some of you who were not members of the forum, or if you didn't follow the Facebook page, you might not have known. You know, I gotta say, Mark Vanderberg was a huge, huge help to me in growing the listenership of this show. Before I joined the Gun Rights Radio Network, I was still kind of struggling to get known and to get, you know, get a popular show out there. My listener count more than tripled in a year since joining the Gun Rights Radio Network. It more than tripled in 12 months after I joined the Gun Rights Radio Network. That's why I chose to give back a lot. I made several donations, financial donations, to the Gun Rights Radio Network over the years. And to Mark Vanderberg, I owe you a huge debt of gratitude. Mark, anything you ever need from me, please do not hesitate to ask. The Gun Rights Radio Network will forever be some place that I will always be thankful for, because the network that Mark put together there was just great. And some of you have been asking me, well, you know, where are you going now, Bob? I don't know. I have been approached by another network. I'm not going to say who right now, because I'm still kind of kicking the can around down the road trying to figure out what to do. But I have been approached by another network to join their network. I haven't decided what I'm going to do. Maybe I'll stay independent. I'm not quite sure. So, you know, as far as forums, a lot of people I know, you've been saying that you, on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, you kind of wanted to know, you know, where to go from there because the forum's shutting down. Some of the forums that I've been on quite a bit, most of you know, you can find me on Warrior Talk quite a bit, which is Suarez International's forum. That's warriortalk.com. I'm also very active at Texas Gun Talk. For those of you who are my Texas listeners, please consider joining Texas Gun Talk. I'm a forum sponsor over there. I like Defensive Carry. I think it's defensivecarry.net. Not quite sure. I think that it's either defensivecarry.com or defensivecarry.net. And then, of course, there's Glock Talk, although, you know, Glock Talk, I've been there quite a few years. When I was there, it was, you know, pretty well focused on sharing information. Glock Talk seems to have been somewhat invaded by some knuckleheads. And I'm not saying that for everybody on the forum. So, you know, if you get a lot out of Glock Talk, great. I go there once in a while just to check things out and see what's going on. They do have some good experts on there contributing, which is kind of cool. So those are some of the forums that I've been frequenting lately, but you know, I'm going to miss the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. I'm really going to miss it. It was a great forum, great people and everything. And I just want to say one more time, goodbye. And let me grab this call. Okay, so goodbye to Mark Vanderberg, the Gun Rights Radio Network. I'm sure I'll be seeing Mark around at shows, NRA shows, or possibly even SHOT Show, possibly the... I'm drawing a blank on that. A Gun Rights Policy Conference, that's right. Okay, let's take the first voicemail.
Hi, Bob. This is Brandon in Pennsylvania, and I'm calling in with a question for the Handgun World podcast. My question is, Why swing the slide home into battery and face the issue of bullet setback if I'm unlocking the breech anyway to do a press check after chambering? For years, I've ridden the slide back into battery, not slow, but under a controlled slower speed, and I never had the extractor fail to pick up the rim of the cartridge. I unlocked the breech to do a press check, but then I bumped the back of the slide to make sure it's back into battery. So I guess that's my question, and I was just wondering what your thoughts are on not swinging the slide home and trying to avoid the bullet setback issue. That's it. Look forward to hearing your response. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Brandon. Let me explain for some people that might not know what he's talking about, the bullet setback issue. If you constantly eject and then re-chamber the same round, and you do that multiple times, you could have what's called bullet setback. You could have an issue with that. Bullet setback means that the bullet itself pushes back into the casing a little bit too far. And I've seen it happen. What's interesting is I've actually pulled rounds out of a box, and they've already been set back. And I have to say that doesn't happen very often with good factory ammo. Sometimes with reloads it does, especially if the person that's reloading is maybe not crimping it well enough or something like that. The bullet setback issue, Brandon, here you're talking about press checks. Now, let me explain what a press check is. A press check, and I teach press checks in the classes that I teach. I think it's very important to do. A press check is what you should do before you carry your gun. In other words, every time the gun leaves your possession, when you put it in the safe, when you start carrying your gun again after you pull it out of the safe, very slightly pull back on the slide. Okay, just very slightly. And in class, I teach you how to do this properly. Just very slightly pull back on the slide. Look inside the ejection port. Or actually, you can just, from the top, from a semi-automatic handgun, you don't even have to look in the ejection port. Sorry, I said that wrong. Just gently pull back the slide. Like, I'm talking quarter of an inch. That's about all you got to do. Just to see if there's brass. If you can see a piece of brass in the chamber. In other words, you're verifying that there is a round in the chamber. I think it's a very good thing to do. You would be amazed how many times teaching a class, someone steps up to the line and we ask him to start shooting the drill. And as soon as they fire that first shot, they hear one of the loudest sounds that a shooter hears. And that's that click when they're expecting a bang. Right? They draw their gun. Press the trigger, click. Why? Because they didn't chamber the first round. For some reason, they didn't chamber the first round. Who knows why? There's all kinds of reasons why a bullet may not find its way into the chamber. Trust me, I've seen this. I'm not lying to you. I've seen this. And it's kind of embarrassing, but more than embarrassing, folks, it could be dangerous. If you're carrying your gun for self-defense and your life is on the line, and you draw that gun, and you press that trigger, and you hear one of the loudest sounds that a shooter hears, and that's that dreaded click when you're expecting a bang, you could lose your life over it. Always do a press check to make sure that you have a round in the chamber. Now, Ben Branham likes to pick on me a little bit, and I think he just jokes with me in class. I'm not saying you do this every time you draw your gun. I'm saying in the beginning of the day, in the morning or whenever it is that you first strap your gun on your belt, do a press check. That's it. Once you've verified that there's a round in the chamber, you don't have to keep doing it every single time. All right, you don't have to do it every time the gun leaves the holster. That'd be stupid, right? Bad guy's about to kill you. You draw your gun, do a press check first and fire him. Fire at him? No, that's not what I'm talking about. It's not what I'm talking about. Just one press check when you first put your gun on. So Brandon's question is, are you going to have the bullet setback issue? I think if you're doing the press check correctly, no, you're not. And Brandon, as far as your question about riding the slide forward, I wouldn't do that. Okay? I would always let that when you're chambering a first round, let that slide slam into battery. Okay? That's what the gun's designed to do. What do you think the gun does when you fire it? Right? When you fire it and the action cycles, that gun does not gently go back into battery. It slams back into battery. The guns are built for that. Ammo is built for that. I think the setback issue was mainly, it mainly comes from law enforcement, where law enforcement used to completely eject the round and then rechamber it. You know, that's what they, that some law enforcement used to do, used to be trained to do that. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about just a slight little pullback of the slide, an eighth to a quarter of an inch, just enough for you to see brass in the chamber. Just look at the top, look through the top of the slide, and you'll be able to see it. That's it. I don't think that's going to cause a whole lot of bullet setback issues, Brandon. It's never happened to me. I've never had bullet setback because of that. Like I said, sometimes if I am using some inexpensive reloads that a friend of mine loaded for me, which I know you're probably saying, hey, don't do that, Bob. Don't shoot anything that you haven't reloaded yourself. You know, I get it. You're right. Sometimes I've done that. I've shot some stuff that other people have reloaded, people that I know. But, you know, even if you're doing the reloading, make sure that you're doing everything properly. Pay attention. But with good factory ammo, I've never had that issue. I've shot thousands and thousands of rounds every year. I've never had the bullet setback issue, Brandon. So, anyway, hopefully that answers your question. Don't ride the slide forward. Don't gently chamber around. I don't recommend that. Okay, if you're at slide lock, insert a fresh magazine, and I don't care what method you use. If you push the slide release lever, or if you use the overhand tug or slingshot method, just let that thing slam shut. Okay, and when you go to do your press check, just a very gentle pullback on the slide. And then you did say that you tap the back of the slide to make sure it's in battery. That's not bad. That's pretty good. That's a good technique, I would say, just to make sure that it's in battery. Okay? Hopefully that answers your question. Let's take the next voicemail.
Hi, Bob. This is Brian. And just wanted to say thank you for all that you do with the Handgun World podcast. I really enjoy it. I was calling about the podcast that I just listened to with you and John Hathaway about the reasons fighting. And one thing that I always have a concern with taking classes and getting training is knowing if the trainer, like how qualified the trainer is, if they're a good trainer, if they're somebody that I would get a benefit and a real good value out of the money that I'm spending on the training, and ways to know about their classes before just signing up and sinking a couple hundred dollars or whatever it is into a class and then finding out if it was something that I was looking for. So anyway, I just wanted to get your guys' opinion about picking a good trainer that you don't have any previous experience with. Anyway, again, thanks for all that you do. Bye.
Great question, Brian. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. When you're checking out a firearms instructor, ask him or her what classes they have taken recently. That's very important. I think the mark of a good instructor is one that continues to get training. And, you know, so many people, when they become a firearms instructor, when they get to print that business card that says instructor, when they join an organization and they're instructor, for some reason, some people think that that's it now. They've hit the top now and they don't have to keep training. I don't believe that. I think they should keep training. Shooting is a perishable skill. I think it's something that they should keep doing. They should keep their skills sharp and keep training. So ask him what they've taken in the last year or two. That's one thing you can do, Brian. Read reviews on their classes. If you go to my website, handgunworld.com, you can read reviews of classes that I've taught. If you go to Warrior Talk and you go to the AAR section, the After Action reviews. You can find some of the classes that I've taught there, and you can read what some students have been saying about the classes. If you go to my Facebook page, if you just search Handgun World on Facebook and find me there and go through my timeline, you can see what a lot of students have been saying about my classes there. So surely the instructor in today's internet age, surely the instructor is going to have some kind of a website or some kind of a Facebook page or some way to contact him or her. And just ask him. Ask him what kind of training they've had. Look at the reviews. And I wouldn't trust a lot of what you hear on forums. Forums get real frustrating to me. Some people get on there and say some really stupid stuff that they just, I don't know where they pull this stuff out of, you know, and I don't know. Sometimes forums just kind of get way out of hand. I'm not quite sure why. It's an interesting phenomenon. But definitely read what other students say. Read the good and the bad. That's one thing that I can tell you, Brian. And you know what? Anybody that has some type of an instructor training, in other words, if they've been to some kind of school to learn to be an instructor, if they've been to the NRA schools to be an instructor, if they're working for a major school or a major law enforcement department, you know, or if they're working for, if they're working on underneath another major instructor in the firearms community, they've had some training, okay, to be a good instructor. And Brian, if you go to a class and you take away one or two ideas, that's all it takes. One or two good ideas that could possibly save your life or make you a more effective shooter. Would you agree that that's worth it? Invest in yourself. The greatest investment that you have. Brian, I hope I answered your question. Next voicemail.
Hi, Bob. This is Chaz. Looking forward to joining with you and Ben up in Centerton, Arkansas in June. But I have a question for you regarding your new 1911s. I was wondering if you could do an experiment by using different magazines from Wilson Combat, Chip McCormick, and, of course, the magazines that were sent with the firearms that you bought. I'm curious as to what your opinions are as to whether the Wilson Combat magazines are actually worth the extra money, or if Chip McCormick, which are a little bit less expensive, work just as well, and if you have any failures with those magazines and the standard issue magazines with those guns. Again, looking forward to seeing you and Ben. Thanks for all the great work that you do on the Handgun World podcast, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Chaz. Good to hear from you. Listen to his podcast, by the way, the Road Gunner Podcast. Chaz is a trucker. If you haven't listened to it, go to roadgunnerpodcast.net, I'm pretty sure, or just search Road Gunner Podcast on iTunes and on the web. You'll find him. Chaz has been on this show a couple times. I've been on his show. Chaz is a good guy. Good question, by the way, Chaz. I can tell you this. Most of you know I'm doing a one-year experiment. I'm switching back and forth between 1911s and Stryker-fired pistols. I want to see. I want to answer this question at least for myself, if it's possible, to switch back and forth. I'm doing a lot of training, and I'm teaching a lot of classes, and I'm doing some competition matches this year with both 1911s and Stryker-fired pistols. I can tell you this so far. I have used the Wilson Combat magazines and the magazines supplied with my 1911s. I've used the magazines that SIG supplies with my SIG 1911, and I used the magazines that were supplied with my Desert Eagle, my Magnum Research 1911. All of them have been excellent. I have had one malfunction in the SIG RCS. Now, I haven't even gotten past the break-in period yet. And, of course, I haven't put 1,000 rounds through either of them. So neither one of these guns have a 1,000-round trigger job. I'm getting there. But I have one malfunction, and it was with the SIG-supplied magazines. But that's not to say that the SIG-supplied magazines are no good. All right, because there's numerous reasons why that pistol could have malfunctioned. So far, the Wilson Combat magazines in both pistols have been flawless. I'm going to buy some Chip McCormick magazines pretty soon. And each gun I fired about a little over 200 rounds of 45 ACP through each one of them. And that's where I'm at. But, yeah, you know, Chaz, good question. I'll report to all of you who listen to this show. I'll report my experiences with my two 1911s. And we'll go from there. Good question. Now, if you like what I do on this show, if this show helps you in any way, would you consider supporting it without even spending any extra money? You can just, whenever you're going to make an Amazon purchase, you can go to handgunworld.com, click on my Amazon store. There's a page there for my Amazon store. If you're going to make a purchase on Amazon, if you do it through my link at handgunworld.com, I get a percentage. I just get a little fee from Amazon. You don't have to pay any extra money. You're going to make the purchase anyway, right? please do it through my store. It's a great way you can help support my show if you like what I do here, and that would be much appreciated. Next voicemail.
Hi, Bob. This is Dave in Utah. I was just listening to your most recent episode where you talk about how you're going to carry and use 1911 for the year, and I think that is a great idea. I'm very excited to hear how that works. Especially to hear how the SIG versus the Desert Eagle 1911 works. I've heard SIGs are very, very well made. And you know, I've heard this debate from people, and I think the differences between a 1911 and a Striker fired gun, I think they get really exaggerated. I don't personally own a 1911. I'm not too familiar with them, but I know people who are very familiar with them, and kind of the impression I get is the difference between a 1911 and a Striker fired gun is kind of like the difference between a Zippo lighter and like a Bic disposable lighter. You know, with the Zippo lighter, to keep it running, you know, you got to have a can of fluid to keep it refilled. You got to have a wick, an extra wick on hand because they do get scorched. So, you know, periodically you have to trim them and replace them. And you got to keep some extra flints on hand because the flints wear out. You got to replace them. But beyond that, I mean, they'll just work for you. You know, and like a Bic lighter, you don't have to worry about refilling it because it's just disposable. You know, you just drop it in your pocket, pick it up, and make fire whenever you want to. So, I mean, I just think that I get the impression that just with just a little bit more maintenance, you know, you can make a Zippo run for you every day just fine. Kind of get the impression that that's what a 1911 is, just they require a little bit more maintenance. But we'll see, won't we? I mean, when you spend a year with these guns. So I'm excited to hear how that turns out, and keep up the good work. Thanks.
Dave, thanks. That's an interesting analogy that you make there. Never thought of it that way. That's pretty cool. I think it's probably, at this point, I can probably tell you that the differences between Striker fire and 1911 as far as defensive purposes, not functionality, I think it is kind of overdone a little bit. I think people get real passionate about the type of gun they have, and they feel that that's all that anybody should carry. I'm trying to answer the question mainly if running a 1911 effectively and using it to defend your life, if it is indeed a training issue or not. And I've heard people say, never train yourself on striker fire pistols and then carry a 1911. You're just putting your life at risk. Well, maybe, yeah, possibly, maybe. I don't know about that. That's kind of what I'm trying to answer. That's what I'm trying to answer. And I'm going to be doing this experiment at the range. I'm doing this experiment at the range to see what happens. By the way, I'm carrying my SIG 1911 right now. It carries great with an aluminum frame. It's really not all that heavy. It carries great. It conceals well. I got my Black Mamba, my Jason Christensen Concealment Solutions Black Mamba that he makes for SIG 1911s, by the way. Highly recommend it. And it's carrying great. I've done a lot of dry fire practice with this 1911, a lot. And mainly all of my dry fire practice has been drawing, practicing, disengaging the safety on the draw stroke so that when I bring that gun to the front of my body to come up on target, that safety is already disengaged. All right, and my finger is indexed along the slide of the pistol. So then that way, I am ready to press the trigger if indeed I need to. That's been the thrust of my practice. But good question, Dave, and good call in. I am going to do the very best I can. And again, you know, it doesn't mean that I have a scientific experiment here and that my word is going to be gospel. I don't want you to think that my word is going to be gospel, but you are going to hear about my experiences. I mean, that's why you tune into this show, right? You tune into this show to hear some of my experiences and hear what I have to say on things. It's very flattering. You know, I keep on saying this all the time. My background's just an everyday guy. I don't come from law enforcement or military or anything like that. But I love to do this. Been doing this since 2005 and been teaching a couple years, and it's a blast. So you'll be hearing more about this grand one-year experiment that I'm doing here. Now, On April 5th and 6th, I am teaching close-range gunfighting version 2 for Suarez International. That's a two-day class, about 600 rounds. It's a new version of close-range gunfighting, Suarez International's signature class. I'm teaching it in San Antonio. If you're going to be in the San Antonio area that weekend, April 5 and 6, or if you're from South or Central Texas, come take my class. The class is over half full, probably closer to two-thirds full right now, so there's not a lot of spots left. That is a class that really focuses a lot on dynamic movement and shooting and making quality hits while you're doing that. And I'm going to teach a little bit of point shooting in that class as well. So that's kind of the new curriculum, kind of a revamped curriculum. Check that out. You can go to my website and you can find that class. You can read about it. You can find that page that I've dedicated for that class. And there's a registration link that takes you directly to the Suarez International website, where you can sign up for that. April 5th and 6th, 2014, in San Antonio at Cedar Ridge Range in Balverde, Texas, north of the San Antonio area, just a little ways. And hope to see you there. Like I said, there's just probably a handful of spots left. And then at some point, I am going to have to cut it off so that the number of students that are there is a reasonably manageable number so that everybody gets a great training experience. All right, next voicemail.
Hey, Bob, this is Dave in Utah again. I was just listening further in your episode about the wussification of America, specifically about the, you know, when people come up with a solution of how do we stop rapes from happening as well. We just teach people not to rape. I think the difference between, you know, the philosophy that comes up with that idea is what they're trying to do is they're looking at something, a society-wide problem, and they want a society-wide solution. They don't want to give people practical advice, you know, for something that they may personally encounter. What they want to do is they want to stop all rapes in America, you know, all of America. And so they're going to get down and they have to figure out what causes people to rape people. Then they're going to have to come up with a curriculum that can be taught and that's going to be effective in stopping the listeners from raping people. Then they have to find a way to, you know, implement that. It's going to have to be taught in schools. It's going to have to be, you know, put on YouTube. It's going to have to, you know, all these different ways to distribute it. And that's assuming that you can actually come up with a curriculum that's going to be, effective. I mean, and I think that's still up to debate. They may still be in the studying stage of that. But the problem that people like us see is that while they are coming up with that society-wide solution, the problem still persists, and during that time, people are still getting, you know, this violent, horrible trauma committed against them. And so, you know, our way of thinking is like, well, maybe they can come up with a solution to that one day, but in the meantime, you know, if someone comes in here and they're bent on this type of horrific violence, the fastest, most effective way to put a stop to that, for, like, really stop it, is, you know, with a firearm. But I think maybe some of these people who think of a society-wide solution, they don't like to think about the fact that there might be personal, person-to-person violence. And I can't blame them. It's scary to think about. But, you know, that might actually be the only way to prevent stuff or to stop a rape from happening is to individually stop the person who's trying to do it. So I think it's just a difference in philosophy. It's very interesting to think about. All right. Thanks. Keep up the good work. Have a good day, Bob. Bye.
Good points, Dave. You know, the anti-gunners, they just don't seem to have a really good cohesive argument, do they? You know, I mean, they have every reason in the book for us not to carry guns, and none of them make a whole tremendous amount of sense. They never feel that the solution to stopping bad guys from doing things like rape and armed robbery and assault and home invasions is to fire back with your own gun. Yet, that's the most effective way. That's the most effective, logical way to do it. I mean, the cops can't get there quick enough. And, you know, no amount of rehabilitation is going to probably make these bad guys from doing, to make them quit doing what they're doing. They're bad guys. That's what they do. You know, I don't know how. I get emotional when I talk about this. They're bad guys. That's what they do. What is it that these anti-gunners can't see? Okay, what part of that don't they understand? The only thing I can think of is that anti-gunners simply have bad intentions. They do not want the citizenry to have the ability to defend themselves and to experience ultimate freedom by repelling a slime ball that wants to hurt them and their family. That's all I can think of, because their arguments make zero sense. Zero. Okay? I haven't heard an anti-gunner come up with a real, cohesive, fact-based, and again, I say fact-based, reason why citizens should not be able to own guns to protect themselves. Haven't heard it yet. And I've been putting this invitation out for a couple of years on this show. If you are an anti-gun person and you want to leave me a comment on my voicemail, the number is 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. You don't even have to come on this show and interview with me if you don't want. Leave me a voicemail up to 3 minutes in length. Call back a couple of times if you have to, you know, if it takes you more than 3 minutes to make your point. Give me a good, cohesive, fact-based, logical reason why citizens should not be able to own guns to fight back against the rapists and the murderers and the thugs and the armed robbers of this world. Come on, anti-gunners, let's do it. Come on. And if, you know, I haven't had it yet, but I'd sure like to hear it. Dave, good call. Thanks. You got me going on that one, Dave. Way to go. Next voicemail.
Hey, Bob. This is Gary from Austin, Texas. I just want to say I really enjoy the show. Keep up the good work. I've called in once before, and today I'm calling about your most recent episode on triggers that included your interview with Chaz, the unnamed trucker. I want to talk about a couple things, but first, I want to reference the part in your episode where you talked about double-action-only revolvers. You talked a little bit about those triggers, but for me, I actually carry a SIG P250 in 9mm, which is a double-action-only semi-automatic. And I just had a couple of questions about that, because for the past couple of months, I've been itching to get a striker-fired pistol. I really want to compete in IDPA. I'm actually going to shoot my first match next month at Texas Tactical here in Austin with my P250. But the reason I want to get a striker-fired pistol is because all of the ones I've tried, including Glocks, obviously, they all I wouldn't say I'm more accurate than my P250, but I can definitely put rounds down range more quickly on target because of the shorter, quicker trigger. And my question for you is, once I shoot IDPA next month for the first time, what benchmark should I be looking for with performance in my P250 to really decide whether or not I'm effective with it? I'm pretty experienced with the trigger. I've put at least 1,000 rounds through it, your 1,000-round trigger job you talk about, and I'm accurate, but most of what I've done is just plinking, you know, up to 25 or more yards. I've done a little bit of movement in tactical base, but I've never done anything like IDPA. So my question to you is, before I actually go out and buy a striker-fired pistol and try it out, what should I be looking for whenever I shoot IDPA with my 250 in order to determine if I'm effective with it or not? Thanks a lot. I look forward to hearing your response in the episode. Have a good night. Talk to you later.
Well, Gary, congratulations on going out and shooting your first IDPA match coming up. And, you know, this voicemail was left a few weeks ago, so maybe Gary might have already done that. Gary, you know what? Your first two or three matches, don't even worry about your performance. Worry about safety and having fun. That's it. Safety and having fun. That's the standard advice I give to everybody. It was what was taught to me when I first started competition shooting, and so I'm just passing along what was taught to me several years ago. Just go have fun and be safe. Take your SIG 250 out there, shoot it, be safe, have fun. After you've shot three or four matches, preferably shoot six or seven matches. Then start looking at your performance. How many zero down hits? How many one down hits? Start looking at things like that in IDPA. Then after you start checking that performance, you know, maybe keep a little log, take a little notepad with you, and on each stage record how many points down you were and what your time was. Just keep this for yourself. I know that there's going to be a score sheet that they're going to be writing it all down on, but just keep a little note because it's easier for you to reference back and forth. Okay, then go get a striker-fired pistol. Most of you know when it comes to striker-fired pistols, I'm partial to Glocks. I really like M&Ps. I've seen people shoot XDs extremely well. But I'll tell you what, you know, just then go get your striker-fired gun after you've shot quite a few matches. So I would say the benchmark you should be looking for to answer your question, Gary, is zero down and one down hits, especially on your... Check out your first shot, okay? Keep track of your first shot out of the holster. And see for yourself whether that double action trigger pull is less accurate for you than the consistent striker fired trigger pull. That's what you want to pay attention to, is that first shot. That's what I would say would be a good benchmark. So take a little notepad with you, keep it in your back pocket while you're shooting. And, you know, when they go to score your targets, the first one that you shot at, try to remember which one was your first shot. And compare that, and just make notes of that, and then when you get your striker fired, when you go get your Glock, or your M&P, or your XD, and your striker fired gun, and you start competing with that, then compare your first shot accuracy as compared to the first shot accuracy with your 250, your SIG 250, okay? Thanks, Gary. I hope that's a pretty good question. Hopefully that answered it. And I want to say this. For those of you who are last-minute people, there's still a little bit of time left. Not much, but this Saturday, Ben Branham and I are going to be up in Dallas, and we're teaching pistol fighting dynamics. It's kind of an advanced version of our Beyond Concealed Carry class. It's a step up, a little bit more tactical than our Beyond Concealed Carry class, although there's nothing wrong with our Beyond Concealed Carry class. I mean, hey, our class with Glenn Tate, by the way, the one that Ben and I are teaching with Glenn Tate, August 9th out in Seattle, it's sold out. We do have a waiting list set up. I've already got three people on the waiting list. So that list is set up. Go ahead and get on the waiting list if you want. We may have some cancellations. August is a long way off, and we may have some cancellations of some people that can't make it. But that class is sold out. So it is a popular class that we teach Beyond Concealed Carry. Pistol Fighting Dynamics is kind of like the next level up. It's coming up this Saturday, March 8th in Dallas. At Quail Creek Range. And so for those of you who are last-minute folks and you want to come out and train with Ben and I up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, go to handgunworld.com and check out the page that we've got set up for that. Okay, next voicemail.
Hey, Bob, this is Gary from Austin again. I forgot to ask you one thing on my last voicemail. I was actually going to talk about the striker-fired pistols I'm thinking about getting. I've actually always wanted to get a Glock 19. But this year, SIG actually announced the SIG P320, which is basically the newest iteration of my pistol. It's SIG's first striker-fired pistol, and basically you can take the grip module, magazine, and barrel from the P250 and use them with the slide assembly and fire control unit from the P320. It's really, really cool. I'm really excited about it. I can't wait to get my hands on one. But my question for you is, would you get a Glock 19 to practice with a different platform, or would you stick with the P320? Since I'm very familiar with the manual of arms on my P250. I just want to know what you think about that. I also thought you think the P320 concept is kind of cool. So, yeah, that was all. I will listen to the next episode. Thanks. Bye.
Gary, if I was in your position, having already owned a SIG 250, I would go ahead and get that SIG 320. You know the manual of arms. It's a striker-fired gun. You like the SIGs. You like that platform. You're familiar with it. Go ahead and do that. As much as I love the Glock 19, in your particular situation, go get that SIG 320 and use that as your striker-fired pistol for your competition, and check it against the double action, single action of the SIG P250. And that modularity concept, the ability to change parts back and forth, well, that's just way cool. That's just a really good idea. So, Gary, that's kind of my answer to your question there as to what I would do if I were you. This next voicemail coming up is pretty cool. It's from a It's from a listener up in northern Utah, and I'm going to play that for you. Before that, I want to talk about the Shooters Club. The Shooters Club, we got some really cool giveaways. I've added three holsters to the Shooters Club giveaway on June 30th. On Your Six Designs, I've purchased three holsters from them. I've purchased a holster for a Glock, a car, and a 1911. So those are going to be thrown in there. And if you're one of the winners and you don't have a car pistol or you don't have a Glock pistol or a 1911, I'll get one for you from On Your Six Designs for whatever gun you have, and I'll get it sent out to you. So add that to the range bag and the ammo and the gun giveaway that we're doing on June 30th, the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield gun giveaway. Join the Shooters Club. It'll help support the work that Ben and I do. Excellent videos. We're going to be taking some more videos this weekend, by the way. This coming up next weekend. We'll be taking some more videos during that class on several different topics and several different techniques. Those will be put up on the Shooters Club website pretty soon. The Shooters Club is a collection of videos and audios not covered on this weekly podcast. It's only $75 per year, just a little over $6 a month, folks. That's not much. You can afford $6 a month, can't you? So go over to handgunworld.com, click the Shooters Club page, get signed up for that. You'll be any active member of the Shooters Club can participate in the drawing June 30th. If you renew, in other words, for those of you who have been with us a year, thank you. Thank you very much for those of you who have supported us for this past year. You can renew at $50 a year, and that counts. So you'll be an active member. And if you can't afford $75 all at once, you can do the $8 a month option. You'll see that on the Shooters Club page as well, the $8 per month option. Okay, here comes the next voicemail.
Hi, Bob. My name is Nate from Northern Utah. In your last episode, you had a question about ARs and mid-length gas systems. I'm no expert, but I've tried to do my best in learning a little bit about it. I purchased my first AR, which was a Bravo Company manufacturing with a lightweight barrel and a mid-length gas system. The first thing I'd say is anyone who's interested in learning probably way more technical information than you'd ever want to know, I'd say go to the website mporcarbine.net, especially under the technical discussion. There are a lot of people there who are professionals and experts in the field and explain it a lot better than I probably will. To get to the initial question that he had about whether he should replace his barrel, which is a carbine length gas system, with a mid-length, the simple answer is probably not, unless he's intending to replace the barrel anyway. The difference in shootability for me shooting them side by side with my friend's carbine length gas system don't seem to be very pronounced. You have to get to where your skill set is pretty advanced before that's really going to speed you up at all. The real difference in operation between a mid-length and a carbine is the increased dwell time that happens in a carbine length gas system, which is the time when the gas system is pressurized. The bullet is past the gas port but hasn't exited the barrel yet. Obviously, with the mid-length gas system being 2 inches farther out, you get less dwell time, which transfers to decreased pressures and a slower operating system, which is a little bit less wear and tear on the bolt in particular. And finally, the difference between feel, like I said, it takes quite a few rounds through both guns side by side to start noticing a difference. I'd say the best example would be a not as drastic difference between a 40 and a 45. The mid-length is going to be a little bit more of a slower, smoother push. The carbine is a little bit sharper. Once again, a very negligible difference. If you're looking to shoot the AR faster, you'd be a lot better off using the money to go buy some ammo and practice running your gun the way that it is. So appreciate you taking the time to listen. Hopefully this helps out. And good luck to everyone.
Great answer, sir. Thank you for calling that in. I learned something by listening to that. He seemed like he explained it pretty well. I can't add a whole lot to that. So thanks again for calling in. You know, my ARs run just fine the way they are. And, you know, I've got a SIG M400, and then I have a Delton, just an inexpensive Delton. I bought that as my first AR-15, my first AR training rifle. That's what it is. It's a great training rifle. My SIG M400, I totally love that AR-15. That's my defensive rifle. I've got an optic on it, and I've got a BCM bolt carrier group changed out on it. And just making those two little simple upgrades, it's just awesome. I use the Lancer. I use the Lancer Warfighter magazines. Those are really good. And I use the Magpul P-Mags. And those have helped out a lot. And I just, try to shoot the snot out of it. So, I'm glad that your last bit of advice there is buy a whole bunch of ammo and get some good training and just go out there and run your gun and learn how to run it well. I would say to that caller who he's talking to, if you want a firearm with a mid-length gas system, go buy a firearm with a mid-length gas system instead of trying to convert your own. So thanks for the call. Now, John Hottaway and I are doing, well, actually, John and Ben Branham and myself are teaching a class on June 7th up in Arkansas. That's a two-day class. We've talked about it when I had John Hottaway on the show a few weeks ago. Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, June 7th and 8th, up in Northwest Arkansas, over at the Nighthawk Custom Training Academy. Chaz from the Road Gunner Podcast is also going to be there to help out. He's going to be an extra safety officer. He's also going to be one of the students. And he'll probably throw in his two cents here and there as to the stuff that we're teaching. But we're teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, the signature class that Ben and I have come up with. And John Hottaway is going to be throwing in his definite excellent John Hottaway training stuff. I really like the fact that he's going to talk about how to use technology, and he's going to talk a little bit about defending family members that might be under attack. That's cool. That's not part of our normal curriculum. So I'm looking forward to learning a lot of what John's going to teach. Again, June 7th and 8th, and that class is listed on the website at handgunworld.com, and you can find a registration link. Well, many thanks to all of you for calling in these voicemails. I have more. I have about another half a dozen of them that I'll be covering next week. So keep them coming, 210-646-1727, or you can go to handgunworld.com and click the Call Me button on the website. That's another easier way to do it. But thanks again for all the voicemails, folks, and thank you for your support of my show. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. The loudest sound that a shooter hears is that dreaded bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
A generation four or